We have a guest joining us by phone this morning. Erica Catton joins us this morning. She's with the Narconon Arrowhead Agency. Erica, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you.
Isn't it nice to be able to say that?
It is. It definitely is.
Because I understand, we all have issues in our lives, but it wasn't always a good morning for you, was it?
No, definitely not. A lot of struggles.
Can you talk a little bit about your story and your battle with addiction?
Sure, I definitely can. I was about 21 years old, and I was just completing college, and I actually ended up getting my wisdom teeth out of just a very minor operation. But what happened was I was prescribed a painkiller called Vicodin, and I became addicted to these drugs, and I couldn't stop taking them. And it got worse and worse, and I started to take harder and harder drugs, and I ended up having to go to treatment for the problem.
You know, I don't think this is necessarily the story that folks expect to hear, because when they hear stories of addiction, I think most folks immediately go to some dark place in their mind, you know, a back alley somewhere with a paper bag, maybe exchanging for a couple of bucks here and there, and they just don't see it as being something as simple as a painkiller.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Even me personally, I had an idea of who or what somebody addicted to drugs was, and when I became addicted to painkillers, I was really in denial about the whole thing. I had all these reasons why it happened and, you know, why it was okay and why I could keep doing it. And I literally went from taking Vicodin to a stronger drug called Oxycontin to then using heroin. And it was very shocking to me that I had gotten to that place in my life.
Can we go backward just a little bit? What was your life like before that?
Before that, I mean, I grew up in a really nice family. We have 5 kids in my family, Italian Catholic family, and we were very, very close. We had aunts, uncles, cousins. We did things together, and I grew up with a lot of love and a lot of stability in my house.
So folks probably thinking, how in the world does all this happen then? Sometimes it just happens innocently.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, you know, I started to abuse these pain pills, not thinking that it was going to be a problem and thinking that I was going to be able to stop. And then I couldn't stop, and I would get physically ill every time I would try to stop using them. And then I built such a tolerance up to the drugs that I just ended up taking stronger and stronger drugs to get the same high.
You know, the more and more people I talk to about their stories, that seems to be the common theme, is that initially they just kind of felt like, well, it's no big deal, it's just once in a while, and I can control it. If I want to stop, I will. But eventually they realize that the chemical addiction kind of takes over. But, you know, you hear those all the time. Isn't that pretty common, though, for folks to kind of feel that way early on?
Absolutely. You know, when you first start using drugs, you think you're invincible, and that it's okay for you to be using, you have all these reasons in your mind why, you know, it's okay to continue to do it. And then as things get worse and worse, the excuses of why you're doing it become a little bit more and more strange, and to the point where your life is just out of control and you finally feel like you need to get some help.
Mm-hmm. So you had the Vicodin, the Oxycontin. Did it escalate from there?
It actually escalated to heroin, and I was using about $80 to $100 of heroin every day.
How do you keep this from the people in your life, the ones that you love, or did they know all along?
Well, you know, at first my family did not know, but they ended up finding out. And, they were very, very heartbroken, and they really wanted me to get help, and they were the reason why I got help.
Did they express to you that maybe they felt like they failed because you were struggling?
I think as a parent, you blame yourself, you blame each other. You just want to find, you know, some kind of a solution for the problem. So I think that as a family member or parent, you go through a range of emotions.
How long was it, Erica, from the time that you first got addicted until you were able to come to grips with, you know, the fact that you need help?
It was about a year after I first started using drugs that I finally decided that I needed to get some help. And it was because of my parents. You know, they sat me down and they said, look, you know, we love you, but we are not going to watch you kill yourself anymore. And you're either going to get into a program or we don't want anything to do with you. You don't have anywhere to live. You don't have any money. And you're going to go get some treatment.
Wow. And that after just a year. I mean, I don't mean to minimize this, but it seems like a lot of the stories I hear, this goes on for quite a long time often before people come to grips with the fact that they need that help and they're willing to go try. In a way, are you kind of lucky that they stepped in so early?
I think I was very lucky that, you know, number one, they stepped in so early, and number two, that, you know, they didn't wait for me to get help, because I think the older you get and the more times you go through treatment, the harder it is to, you know, continue to stay sober.
What was that like for you, having to come to grips with that and having your family confront you about that?
You know, it was tough. I was in denial. I didn't want to go to treatment at the time. I didn't think I needed help. I didn't want help. And the truth was that I really needed help. So, you know, at the time I was very upset about it. But, you know, now looking back on it, it was the best thing that happened.
Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about that process, how that worked? Because did you actually go to the facility?
Yeah, you know, my dad had been researching programs for about 6 months. So 6 months after I'd been using, he was, you know, researching programs. And he ended up finally knocking on the internet. He liked that it was drug-free and that it was long-term and it was somewhere that I would go and stay. And I did end up going there and staying at the facility for about 3 months.
What was your reaction when you first, I mean, they can't take you without, you know, you being willing to go. So what was your reaction when you first got there and the family waves goodbye and now it's up to you?
Well, when I first got there, I didn't want to be there. I wanted to leave and, you know, I didn't want to get help or treatment or anything. But, you know, as I was there for, you know, after the first month, I started feeling better. Then after about a month and a half to 2 months, I really decided that, you know, if I wouldn't have gotten help, that I would have really, really destroyed my life and destroyed myself.
It took a lot, I'm sure, for your family to get you to realize that and to get you where you could get help in the first place. But what was their support like after you started through the treatment program?
Well, they were very supportive. I mean, if I called and had a bad day, they would say, look, we love you, you got to stick with it. There was a lot of days where I called and I wanted to come home, and they just said, look, you have to get help. You know, you have to stay there, and you have to, you know, do what you have to do to get better.
So your parents never really cut you out of their lives?
No, I mean, they threatened to, but I think, you know, as a parent, you love your child more than anything. You definitely, if you can avoid doing that, you want to. You don't want to cut your child out of your life. You just want them to get help.
Well, working with Narcanon, I'm sure you've seen other circumstances where there are times that families just say, I'm done, I'm finished with it, you're on your own.
Sure. There are definitely some times when, you know, families do that, and you know, I think at the time when they do it, I feel like if you have to do it, it's a tough love approach and it can work, but I think the goal should be to try to get the person into treatment.
And that doesn't happen overnight.
No, I mean, for some people it takes years. You know, I've recently had a family member that, you know, it took a very, very long time for them to get the individual into treatment, and, you know, she ended up not really being able to get through it and do what she needed to do, but it was very tough for the family member.
Why was this particular program good for you? I guess, first of all, let me ask you, was this the first and only program that you tried?
Yes, it was the first and only program that I tried.
Okay, so you don't have really anything else to compare it with. But why was it successful for you?
It was successful for me because it was long-term. It was something that I went and stayed at. I was taken out of my environment with all the people and all the places and all the things I knew that, you know, had to do with drug use. And it was also successful because of the sauna detox. That, for me, really helped me so I wouldn't crave the drugs. Before I did the sauna detox, I would crave the drugs so heavily that I wouldn't be able to quit.
Well, they take you out of that element, and they take away the temptation, I guess.
Absolutely, and that's what happens. You just have your environment change. And, you know, above and beyond the sauna treatment, which handled the cravings, I was actually taught a lot of life skills. And at that time in my life, when I was 21 years old, I needed life skills. I needed to learn how to manage my life. I needed to decide what I wanted to do. I needed to have some kind of a purpose and some kind of an area that I was going to go in life that I was doing. Because before that, with drugs, I didn't have any of that.
You bet. Well, Erica, there are unfortunately a lot of stories like that out there. And even worse are a lot of folks who don't get the kind of support that you got from family and friends that don't really ever have anybody push them to the point that they realize that they need to make that change in their lives. But you guys do go through this all the time. You get lots of phone calls from folks because they are in a certain circumstance where they do need that assistance. What happens when they make that call?
Well, what happens when someone makes a call into Narcanon is we do a free assessment. We figure out, you know, what is the situation. We also decide, you know, what kind of treatment is best for them. We don't automatically send everyone into the Narcanon program. Narcanon actually has 10,000 treatment programs across the country. And so we will find the right program, and then we do a free referral to the program. And we'll also do, you know, just light counseling as far as what to do if you need an intervention, what are some of the best places, the difference between programs. Because a lot of people, you know, if you're not on drugs and you're not working in the rehabilitation field, you don't really know what the different programs are.
That's absolutely true. And all you have to do is do a little bit of the research, I guess, like your dad did. Do a little research, go online, find out more, and they can find Narconon online as well.
Absolutely. You can find Narconon online at www.stopaddiction.com, or you can find Narconon through Facebook. The page is Narconon Arrowhead.
Okay, very good. Or you can call the toll-free number.
Yeah, and the toll-free number is 1-800-468-6933.
Great. And no better time to change someone's life, no better way to change someone's life than to make that phone call or do that research today. Well, Erica, thank you very much. I'm glad your story so far has been a successful one. We hope that continues for you.
Thank you very much.